Welcome again to the Cannabis Investing Podcast, where we speak with C-level executives, scientists, and law and sector experts to provide actionable investment insights and the context with which to understand the burgeoning cannabis industry. I'm your host, Rena Sherbel. Hello again, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Happy 2021. Great to have you back listening with us. Great to be a part of your new year. Obviously, today is the day the elections went down to Georgia, and so far, so good for the fans of a blue sweep. For those who believe a blue sweep in Georgia equals a more of a green rush in the stock market, as we see cannabis stocks kind of soaring today, and really these past couple of weeks, doing great things for anyone following our model cannabis portfolio or have their own cannabis portfolio. I hope you are seeing lots of green, lots of soaring numbers, which isn't to say that that's going to last forever, but certainly some good news out of the States, something we've been talking about on the show recently. Last week, we were talking about Israel and the progress that's being made there and hopefully more to come. Of course, a country that not many people see a lot of progress happening or a lot of good news forthcoming is Canada, which kind of started the bullishness of, or certainly one of the countries to start the bullishness on the cannabis, you know, real investing in the cannabis sector. Obviously, Canada has suffered from a lot from overvaluation. And today we're talking to Jeff Fallows, president of Valens Company, which focuses more on the cannabis 2.0, 3.0 products, the extraction process, getting those cannabinoids to the market. They have a cannabis beverage in the market, which we talked to Jeff about and his feelings on the beverage market and actually where he feels that they could have done better because there's so much demand there that he sees and what they're looking for in 2021, what they're looking forward to rolling out, what they're looking forward to in terms of shareholders, less of a discrepancy between where the share price is and where they feel like the value really is with Valens. And we get into what the cannabis sector looks like possibly for CPG companies coming in and why Jeff decided to even get on board with Valens, what Valens was bringing to the table that he thought looked better than anyone else in the Canadian sector. And Jeff gives us the details on what it was like to be the first investment banker getting into the cannabis sector. So a lot of expertise and knowledge that Jeff is drawing on from. And we're excited to bring you that conversation and see what you think about Canada and maybe Valens as a Canadian player that may make more sense than a lot of Canadian LPs that get talked about a lot more. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on where you think the Canadian space is, if you have any bullishness on it, where you see things going. Always great to hear from our community of cannabis investors. I know a lot of people excited right now and a lot of exciting things coming down the pike. We have really some great conversations lined up for the beginning of 2021. We have our three-peat guests, John Sandelman, CEO of Air Strategies. Of course, anyone following the podcast and the cannabis sector know there's a lot of exciting news there. We have Smoke Wallen, who talks to us about CBD and that whole market. And believe me when I say that's a great conversation. Lots of great people that we're talking to. We get into a SPAC conversation. Hopefully, we're going to have a couple of those conversations. And just really excited to bring you more cannabis content to help shore up your investment views on the cannabis industry, to help fuel your bullishness on the cannabis industry, both on the investment side and also generally what cannabis is providing to consumers, to patients. And we hope you enjoy this conversation. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice of any sort. Amlong, Trulieve, Chiron, and Isocan Biosciences. You can subscribe to us on Libsyn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Stitcher. And we'd really appreciate you leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts so other investors can find our show. Jeff, welcome to the Cannabis Investing Podcast. Really great to have you on the show. Thank you for joining us.
And thanks for having me.
So talk to us about Valens. You guys, I would call you guys an ancillary company. Talk to us about how you got to Valens and what excited you about the cannabis industry.
Sure. So prior to joining Valens, I was approximately 20 years in the investment banking industry. But key to that was I was 10 years in the cannabis sector itself. I believe I was the first and original investment banker into the cannabis space, as I was working with the only provider of medical marijuana at that time, being Prairie Plant Systems, in helping them raise money in a private context. Then as the sector began to evolve and it became, the legal framework was announced, obviously I was in the best position to, you know, meet all the new companies and visit all their facilities, you know all the management teams, see all the strategies, which was, you know, a great way to sort of enter the space. But then as I came across Valens, and it was literally on a cold call, I went out to see the facility and meet with Tyler Robson, our CEO. And at that time, the facility was actually, had just been, all the equipment had been pulled out. We were doing, or they were doing at that time, you know, redoing the floors, et cetera. But even in that state of disrepair that I saw the facility in at that time, just sitting down with Tyler, it really showed me, you know, the value of the platform and the strategy that he was executing. And right away, in my view, distanced itself from all the other opportunities I was seeing in the sector. So at that point, I brought them on as a client in my investment banking franchise. Raised a couple rounds of equity, almost $75 million for them. And following that second raise, you know, the relationship between Tyler and I and Valens and I had really grown to be more of a, you know, a weekly or a more involved advisor, to the point it made sense for me to come and join. You know, and maybe a little more specifics on what I saw at that time. You know, if you look at Valens and our position on the value chain, and our ability, particularly within the Canadian framework, to extract value, no pun intended, out of the value chain and in the process of getting cannabinoids to market, really, you know, I think our strategic positioning on that value chain is second to none in the industry.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we talk about Canada and so many people are down on Canada, you know, whereas I think a lot of the reasons to be down on Canada, it's really just been kind of a return to sober numbers, I think. But I think what there is to like in Canada is companies that have found a niche, kind of a business model that works. And like you said, like moves away from the cultivation plays that, you know, there are, there's no lack of cultivation plays to be had in Canada. But I think what there is to like about Valens is it's capitalizing on this different part of the market, which I would call, you know, which people call cannabis 2.0, but also this different business model that I think speaks to a little bit of what you're talking about. Would you agree with that?
I would 100%. I mean, I think from a Valens perspective, we've also suffered a little bit from, you know, Valens is always, you know, focused on, from our investor standpoint, from a market standpoint, what we are delivering. You know, we believe in the model, we believe in what we're delivering today is value added for shareholders and in the market, versus, you know, what else we're seeing in the market. And it goes to your point about, you know, over promising and under delivering in the market, where people were really selling dreams in other platforms, what size of the market would be, how much of the market they were going to get. And so on the one hand, we get people looking at the Canadian market and saying, it never lived up to those standards, it must be bad, which is actually the opposite of true. The growth has been quite good relative to normal standards. And then also from a Valens perspective, because we've just been focusing on what we're actually doing, you know, as you see in our financial performance and share price, we're still playing a little bit of catch up. But we as a management team believe, as you see our execution results and our delivery of products to the market, that, you know, that dichotomy will soon change.
So when you saw Valens, was it the first of its kind that you had seen, or it was doing it the best that you had seen?
No, it was both, I guess. It was the first that I'd seen. And there's a couple of other opportunities that have come to market with that same view. But what's interesting is Tyler's relationships in the industry. You know, he's a, if you were to you know, on a bulletin board, put, you know, pins around and draw yarn around and try to figure out who's who in the zoo and draw all of that, you're going to see that Tyler is actually at the center of the industry at the early days and growing through. So all of those who have come with the extraction model following us really did so on the back of either speaking with Tyler or getting his advice on some things, you know, by and large across the sector.
And did you come on board like when it had already transitioned to its second iteration, like after Valens became, when it became Valens instead of Growworks?
Oh, yes, for sure. So it you know, Tyler had taken the reins of CEO. He had already, like, he originally started as COO. He took over as CEO, changed the focus of the company, positioned it properly relative to the opportunity in the market, as we've talked about. And at that point, that's where I met him. And then, you know, help with the capital raising.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So when you were still working on the investment side of things and thinking about how you wanted to get more involved in the industry, what were you thinking at all along these lines? Like, oh, the middle of the supply chain, that's something that hasn't really been addressed yet in a viable way. Or did this come to you and you're like, it kind of just made sense and it clicked?
Yeah. So, I mean, I honestly, I had no intentions of leaving the investment banking world at the time I did. But when the offer was put to me, you know, with the platform that Valens had and the opportunity I saw with that platform, to me, that was just an opportunity that was just too good to give up. Then I believed it was the name to beat. And even to this day, I continue to think that.
Okay. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, everybody kind of says that flower will never go anywhere in terms of the cannabis consumer. There's always going to be a place for flower. But really, we see the numbers going down kind of every year and the projections going down every year. And you guys come in and talking about like cannabis 2.0 is, well, it uses the flower, but it's also obviously bringing different products to patients and different products to consumers. Do you think more and more that that's going to be the push for consumers in cannabis? And do you think also that that's a way that CPG companies are going to get in without being on the cultivation side of things?
I do. So do I think flower is going to be around? Always. I do. 100%. There's a large portion of the market. It's an enjoyable experience for many people, and they will continue to use flower. But where I see the growth in the market from today and going forward is all on sort of after the flower kind of product base. So, you know, based on extraction, based on isolating the cannabinoids and putting them in formats and delivery mechanisms that are new to consumers and or drive either an experience they're looking for, a feeling they're looking for, or an outcome they're looking for. So I do believe going forward, you know, these 2.0 or extraction-based products are going to lead the way. And from a CPG perspective, you know, I think that's definitely the case, because if you think about, let's say somebody like a Coca-Cola and their formula and their inputs, there's no variability. There's no inconsistency from batch to batch. It is 100% dialed in. And the only way you're going to get to that kind of accuracy is by going to an extracted product. Flower is just simply not able to provide that, even if you could get the format into the type of products that somebody like a Coca-Cola would be looking to release.
Right. Well, speaking, since you brought Coca-Cola up, I'm curious what, you know, the beverage space in cannabis has had kind of its fits and starts. Where do you see that going, and how quickly do you think that that's going to be something in the marketplace that people are really buying up because the quality is there and the efficacy is there?
Yeah, so we're pretty excited about what the beverage market is going to provide. Particularly from a Valens and the Source by Valens technology perspective. So if you look at the available products in the market, we believe that our offering, although in low quantity today, continues to be regarded as in the market and you know, viewed by us as be the best product in the market, not only in terms of taste and profile to the consumer, but also in the ability to deliver the cannabinoids in a consistent and a predictable way. So, you know, if I look back on, you know, the last year as a manager of the business and a contributor to the strategy, I think that may be one area where I go back in and put a little bit more focus on increasing our output volume capabilities a little faster. We were quite frankly a little surprised with how much demand there was for our initial offering and, you know, our operational capabilities in the short term, you know, hampered our ability to get more in the market. Where, you know, guys like, you know, Constellation with their offering, Hexo, et cetera, haven't. But as we roll forward into 2021 here, you know, we've come up with some strategies to increase that output. And then when our Palmies facility comes online, you know, we're very excited about the opportunity that's going to provide our shareholders.
So you're looking to get more product out even before you're able to kind of create more product?
100%. So it's about, you know, operational efficiencies. It's about, you know, changing a thing here, changing a thing there to make sure that we can launch more products, to make sure we can get more volumes out more efficiently and a better cost profile. It's always a continuous cycle of improvement for us.
So where do you see kind of, I would say, the next year and then the next few years going in terms of where do you see Valens' place, like growing in the ecosystem, and how do you see the ecosystem itself growing?
So maybe I'll start with the ecosystem itself. So I think, you know, it's going to you know, grow into a whole lot more, you know, mass consumer friendly way. And as we talked about, that's 2.0 and 3.0 products. You know, cannabis is going to reach more people in more ways as we're continuing to roll. And from a Valens perspective, you know, as I said, once we're able to control the extraction in a way that we do and isolate the cannabinoids and deliver them in the way that we can do, we are clearly at the forefront of and leading that charge in terms of those new next generation products that consumers are looking for. You know, and I think, yeah, as we're, you know, the primary segment in that, you know, broadening of the view is, you know, much like the health and wellness category, which we're very excited about at the Valens perspective. And as we're starting to reach, you know, that's more of the non-cannabis user today. People are looking for, you know, how can you help my lifestyle? How can you help me, you know, with, you know, my aches and pains? How can you help me with, you know, feeling better on a day-to-day basis, where cannabinoids, you know, are showing a lot of ability and capability of addressing those kind of, you know, mass consumer needs. And you're going to start seeing a lot more of that from Valens coming in 2021 and 2022.
You mentioned Coca-Cola as a company, you know, that might get into the space, but there's obviously, you know, a wellspring of other companies that are going to keep wanting to come into the space. How do you see that playing out in terms of these big companies? Do you see, you know, there's obviously lots of talk of consolidation. Do you see Valens continuing to make its own way, or do you see them partnering, or are they looking, you know, where do you see that going?
Sure. And I don't mean to imply by any means that I believe Coca-Cola is going to be in the space. It's just certainly an example. But as I'm looking at, you know, the space in general, I think what the CPG companies themselves are looking for is their traditional way to launch products. So that means proper testing, proper stability, tests in place, proper taste testing, proper market research, all of those things, of which, if I look at the market and the ability of cannabis companies existing in the market today to be able to service that, there's a very short list, of which I would put Valens at the top. And certainly the conversations we've had on this regard, and as we're working with CPG companies in that very way, product development exercises, testing, et cetera, you know, the feedback that we get by and large is, you know, the platform or the service profile that we're offering is exactly what they need in reviewing the cannabis space and identifying their product opportunities going forward. So as they get more and more interested, and they should, because as I said, you know, we're really only talking about two cannabinoids right now, THC and CBD. And CBD has shown to have a lot of impact in the health and wellness sector, as we talked about. But there's a whole host of other cannabinoids in there that we are already able to isolate and provide in product formats that will have a whole host of other benefits to consumers that these sorts of you know, CPG companies will be looking to exploit, like, you know, bath bombs, for example, or toothpastes or sunscreens, or, you know, all these sort of mass consumer items are still in early stages.
And are you looking to partner with companies across the world, or is there a particular focus that you have?
No. So I think, you know, right now, from a product identification perspective, we're not limiting ourselves. We have conversations with a number of parties, whether they're international companies or, you know, Canadian-based companies. Certainly, from a shareholder perspective, we want to make sure that we're accessing, you know, the best possible partner and the best possible market opportunity. But right now, we're still at the early stages of those product developments and having those conversations, seeing what they like, seeing, you know, what those product development exercises are like, and you know, working through those.
And are there times where you're, you know, turning people away because you are inundated with so many partnerships, or we're not talking about that yet?
No, all the time. So we turn people away all the time. There's a couple different viewpoints here. So there's one, the testing and the product development exercises are largely, my comments there are largely related to large scale CPG companies. You know, let's call it like a Procter and Gamble, or as I said, a Coca-Cola, or those sorts that have, you know, big plans, but also need, you know, a low risk entry into the market. And so there's lots of background work that gets done. But what we've seen is at the early stages of the market development, we've seen these sort of innovative or smaller CPG or branded companies that are, you know, coming to Valens and saying, we'd like to get, you know, a vape pen on the market. We'd like to get a beverage on the market, et cetera, like you've seen in our portfolio. As we, you know, work with those companies, you know, what we've had to do is say, we can't be everything to everybody in this regard. So as we're rolling out or increasing our production capacity, and as we're selling in products to the market, there has to be a portfolio view there. You can't have one product format that's going after the same consumer across five different customers. It just doesn't make sense. That's a very limited way. You won't have any growth. So what we've had to do is take a portfolio view, determine which of those parties that we're talking about fit best into which market segment, and focus on developing the products there so that we maximize our entry into the market as a whole and create the most value for our shareholders.
And are you looking to be in all parts of the market?
For most parts of the market, as we're seeing today, yes, we have a capability to deliver on most of those. But as you know, there will start to be more niche market segments or opportunities that start to break away as the market continues to develop, and we're not necessarily going to fill each of those. It's all about investment and return on that investment for our shareholders in terms of what market segments we choose to enter or not.
And when you're looking at who to partner with, like how much are you paying attention to the regulatory picture, you know, the states, but even, you know, more international than that? Are you paying attention to that, or are you looking at the market and the market opportunity and who's running the company and worrying about kind of the moving parts as they play out?
I think it's on a case-by-case basis, and I think we look at it on a holistic viewpoint. So, you know, out of the gates, you know, if you have a large-scale international-based CPG company looking to do some product development work with you, I think that's a pretty easy decision to say, you know, that opportunity is something we should explore with that company. But I will say, as we're looking about international, you know, we're certainly not looking to pull in a CPG company that, say, for example, is landlocked in Africa, as an absurd example, but, you know, to show you that, you know, clearly there's a focus on where do we believe we can get product, where do we believe we have infrastructure in a way that can satisfy the demand from that customer, and how does that fit into our overall strategic plan and getting into those markets. So clearly those data points go into the decision-making process. You know, but also at this point, given the early stage of you know, the CPG companies exploring and the amount of work that has to be done, you know, there's not too much of a fine point on that just yet. There'll be several phase approach to bringing them to market.
And are there times where you've partnered with a company or in a certain part of the market where you had a thesis that you thought was going to work out one way and you kind of at the end of the day, we're like, no, this isn't working out, and kind of got out of that part of the market. Has anything surprised you in that way?
Certainly that happens, especially when you're have a developing market like the cannabis sector is. You know, there's SKUs that you launch or products that you launch that, you know, either miss the mark from a pricing perspective or from a formulation perspective. You know, certainly that's to be expected. But the key is to have a system in place or a process in place that allows you to continually go back and look at the SKUs and the partners you're working with, evaluate whether they're hitting the benchmarks and the goals you set for them. And then if not, you know, not being afraid to rationalize them or to refocus those products or those partners in the areas that can get the return you need.
And have you ever kind of been like, okay, we're just scratching this completely. This just isn't moving. It's not about a price point or it's not about a part of the market. It's just, yep. It's just, you know, this form of extra or whatever it is, it just isn't working out.
Yes, we have. Yep.
Gotcha.
I'd say we haven't made any, you know, there hasn't been a large scale bet that we've had to pivot on. But certainly I think every company would have had that situation, but yes, we have specifically.
Is it something that you chalk up to, look, these are the numbers as part of dealing with business? Or do you feel like there were lessons that you learned that have kind of, you know, refocused going forward, how you've approached things?
I think both. I think, look, sometimes the numbers just weren't materializing as we thought. And we, you know, based on the information we had at the time, we thought we made a good decision and a good focus. And it proved out to be otherwise. I think that's just normal business. You know, it certainly we're as a management team, you know, we try to make the right decisions. We do the background work before we don't sort of shoot by the hip. We do the work and we do the analysis to try to decide, but you know, we're not always going to be right. But we try to make sure that, you know, we have a proper risk adjusted return for any sort of, avenues we choose. And, you know, so far I'd say that we've done a good job of that with no large exposure, or no major missteps. Although, you know, we have had some lessons learned.
So speaking of management and learning lessons, you guys are profitable, one of the few cannabis companies to be profitable. You're net cash positive. You know, we talk a lot about on the podcast this, how a cannabis investor has to, really any investor, but certainly in the space, has to navigate, you know, people that promise big and give you a good headline, but don't necessarily aren't able to follow up on it. And this has been like the great reckoning. You know, the past few months of companies that have been, you know, growing responsibly are really kind of coming to the fore for investors. I think they're starting to see that and paying attention. As a company that seems to be doing things the right way, you guys are, you know, backing it up with profitability. How much do you attribute that to your backgrounds as the management team? And how much do you attribute it to the team you've built? Where do you think that that ability to kind of navigate responsibly, what do you attribute it to, and what do you think investors should be looking for when they're looking for that?
I'll give it, especially at this point in our development, that nod to Tyler. I think it's all about, you know, having the vision, number one, which I think he had a vision like nobody else had, number one, and number two, focus. So not getting distracted by shiny objects, not being trying to be too much to too many people, but keeping a focus on those activities that will drive the vision that you have. So I think we've done a good job of that. We're constantly going back and trying to, you know, focus our teams internally based on priorities. Here's our core priorities. Here's what we're doing to achieve our strategic objectives. That's where you need to be spending your time. Anything else is a distraction. Don't do it. So I think that's helped us largely, and especially over the last, you know, 9 months in the face of COVID and the challenges in base extraction, you know, that focus and you know, pivoting aggressively the business model and accelerating our product plan, like our ability to execute on that really came on the back of that, you know, ability to focus.
And would you say one of those distractions, would you say one of them is the share price, like paying attention to that, or and you're just kind of focused on what the business is itself?
Well, I mean, certainly for our majority of our employees, they should not be focused on day to day on what our share price is. But for the executive team, for Tyler, for myself, for Everett, our job is to be the stewards of shareholder capital. And so that necessarily means we have to keep an eye on what's going on with the share price, you know, how we're communicating, you know, if that's not working and we don't believe that our message is getting across, changing our message, you know, share price. I won't call it share price management, but, you know, looking after that and monitoring and making sure that we're doing everything we can to support our shareholders in that regard is a requirement. You know, but in the end, it will come down, we believe, fundamentally to execution. So, you know, we never take our eye off executing, driving business, making responsible decisions with shareholder money. But, you know, we have to keep an eye on our share price.
And do you think some of it is because of, you know, the Canada aspect, that people are just bearish right now on cannabis companies in Canada for various reasons, some of which we've talked about? Do you guys think that there's a negative effect from that?
I think definitely there is. I think if you look at us, you know, our share price is largely impacted by the news of other people, you know, by and large. So yes, I think we have some play victim to, you know, some of the failings of others, the sentiment in the market, you know, based on those and the poor performance. Yes, I think that's undeniable. You know, I think if we're looking at a market that should rationalize some, And there should be, you know, there shouldn't be as many cannabis companies out there as there currently are. I think the capital markets continue to prop up some players that maybe they shouldn't, in terms of, you know, getting to that equilibrium state in the market where, you know, the shareholders of all companies can be, you know, focused on just what the management team's doing in terms of driving that share price performance. But, you know, we're not there yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of not there yet, how much do you focus on, you know, the desire to uplist to a major exchange? How much energy is put on that?
Again, that goes to just driving shareholder value. So we did this in the short term to get to the TSX because it meant, you know, better governance framework, because it meant as we're moving up that, you know, from an institutional investment perspective, we thought it was important for our existing shareholders to make sure that we're, you know, getting that type of investor in and making ourselves more appealed to that. But moving up to, say, a US exchange or moving over to a US exchange as well, it's certainly something we're, you know, we've contemplated, we're reviewing, but it's going to largely be based on, number one, you know, what's the opportunity that that's going to provide our shareholders if we do it? And number two, are we ready to do it? Because as you go to the US and certainly the, you know, the litigation environments and et cetera, that's going down there, it's not just as simple as saying, I want to list on the US exchange. There's a whole lot more that you have to keep in mind going down there, an infrastructure, a team, reporting, all those kind of things. We need to make sure that we are ready and before we do such a thing.
Got it. Got it. So in the next year, what do you see for investors in Valens? What do they have to look forward to?
I think they can look forward to us continuing to execute, to driving and to converting. As we said, our plan was to, you know, get new innovative products to market and start to see those volumes start to grab market share, or those products increase in volumes and grab market share. So, you know, right now I'd say the market largely in 2020 has been a trial market. You know, it's been hard to develop brands. You know, people are trying a bunch of different products, trying to understand, you know, who's who, what products they like, you know, what formats they like, et cetera. But what we're seeing now, and particularly in the volumes coming through our platform, is that the quality of our products and those that we're providing our customers is starting to take hold. So people are starting to come back. We're starting to see elevated volumes on a month-to-month basis come back to our SKUs. So you're going to start to see us, you know, grab the kind of market share that we have been, you know, telling investors that we should be grabbing. You're going to start to see it across, you know, a number of our product categories. So that would be one for sure. Number two, I think you're going to start to see us be, you know, a little more aggressive out there. If I look at 2020, there was lots of, you know, we'd had to learn to walk before we could run. We had to make sure that our processes were in place. We had to make sure that we were, you know, bringing new products to market in an efficient, cost-efficient way, and that we were positioning them properly. And as I said, we had that portfolio view. So we believe that belt and suspenders, we believe that is now in place. We believe we got that right. And now as I look into 2021, you know, that platform can really just start to drive into the market. So we're excited about that, but that will also allow us, you know, the opportunity to focus and potentially look into other market opportunities as well. Whether that is, you know, adding different product formats to our existing platform in Canada, or, you know, looking for select opportunities internationally that can leverage, you know, all our knowledge and all our capabilities in a way that provides, you know, some outsized returns for our shareholders.
And are you pleased so far with how Canada is kind of not fixing it, but kind of rethinking its rollout? Do you feel like they've made good adjustments?
I guess by and large, yes. I mean, I'm a little disappointed with the retail infrastructure rollout from a Canadian perspective. I thought that could have, you know, provided more opportunities for us. I think if I look at the objective of the Canadian government to you know, to eradicate sort of the black market and to bring everybody into the light of a legal market, you know, I'd say, you know, looking at the, you know, the tax structure and some of those things that they've got in place, you know, potentially limits our ability to provide the price points and opportunity to do that. I think that may, you know, provide an opportunity going forward. And also then in terms of other distribution outlets, again, if I look at the health and wellness category, for example, or let's say there's a aging demographic, are those aging demographic looking for skincare or CBD cream for aches and pains? Are they going to want to go through a dispensary, or are they going to want to have some other access point for those products? I think that may be something that, you know, would be worthwhile looking at rolling forward.
And do you think that's coming in any way?
I think to me, it's certainly a strong possibility. I just think that as cannabis is in the market, and as you know, CBD from a separate, distinct cannabinoid perspective than THC, as you know, the benefits of that become more and more known, and other cannabinoids become more and more known, where there's no impact seen in the market other than healthy ones. Right, like there's been no adverse events. There's been no you know major catastrophes that have happened. So yes, you can credit the Canadian government with the infrastructure there, but also it's a safe and effective product. So the more comfortable our society gets with that, the more access points they will necessarily get. That's my view.
And do you guys spend time like lobbying any of this, or trying to educate government on these points?
We do have some select conversations for sure. But you know, from our team's perspective, to be honest with you, it's all hands on deck in terms of execution and driving operational and financial performance. But as I said, as we've got our new building online, we've got our processes in place, we've got products in the market that are really working for our customers and gaining market share. You know, we can then start to say, okay, from a management team and a strategy perspective, you know, how can we support and supplement that? And that, you know, may mean, you know, greater touch points with the Canadian government or others.
And you mentioned looking, you know, internationally. What are some of the markets that are exciting you right now?
You know, there's lots of exciting opportunities out there, you know, longer term. I think in the shorter term, you know, that's where we're cautious and saying, you know, don't chase things too aggressively, too quickly. Make sure before you're putting a dollar investment out there, there's a reasonable opportunity for a return on that investment in the near term. So, you know, we're very excited about Australia. It's a smaller market right now, but it's medical. It's a medical focus, and our partner in Australia is doing a great job for us, Canvalate. I think we structured that deal exactly right. I think we got the exact right partner, and so the opportunities that we're going to see in Australia in 2021 are quite good. At the same time, we're also seeing, you know, other areas of interest that we have and that we've identified in our investor presentation. UK and Europe, certainly with novel food and challenges related to the novel food program and other things, it's a little bit opaque, but there are some select market opportunities that will allow us to establish a base and be opportunistic as that market grows. I'd say the same thing about Mexico and some of the conversations that we're having there. You know, and obviously, if I look to the U.S., as that market begins to get some more structure and provide an opportunity that, you know, shows a more direct pathway to something like Valens driving return, you know, we're always looking at that market as well and getting, you know, being preparing to be opportunistic there, you know, should the legislation, you know, go our way and the standards in the industry go the right way. So that's also an interesting opportunity for us.
Very good. Very good. Well, anything you want to leave listeners with, Jeff, before we go?
Well, I guess the overarching message from, you know, many of the comments I've given today, which is, you know, from a Valens perspective, I think we would have been better off in the early days if we did not push so aggressively on our tolling extraction contracts and publicizing those so aggressively, because right overnight we became, you know, the toller. And in any other industry, a toller is not exactly an exciting business model that you think, you know, big growth and big margins. That being said, I think what we're showing, and we have shown over the last couple of quarters, is that we are not a tolling company, nor have we ever been. We have always been a cannabis products company. And as we continue to execute more and more SKUs, and also start to take more and more market shares from the products that we're putting out there, that fact should become more and more apparent to investors and to the market. And as that happens, you know, from an investor perspective, we believe that that's going to be the inflection point between, you know, where Valens sits today and the challenges we've had from a value perspective and where we're going to go. So for us, we're very excited about 2021 and our ability to demonstrate that to the market and drive that, you know, outsized returns for our shareholders.
Awesome. Well said. Well said. Well, like I said, a lot of readers and listeners on Seeking Alpha are excited about Valens and what you guys have going on in Canada. And as you know, the excitement of Canada on Canada does not spread very far. So really happy, Jeff, that you came on and talked to us more about Valens, and hope to have you on again next year and give us an update.
Well, I really appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for listening to the Cannabis Investing Podcast. Subscribe or follow us on Seeking Alpha, Libsyn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or Stitcher. And we'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other investors find our show. If you have feedback or questions, we'd love to hear from you at Rena plus the plus sign CANPOD at SeekingAlpha.com. That's RENA plus CANPOD at SeekingAlpha.com. Thanks so much for listening, and see you next time.